1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Local Youth Worker, a podcast brought to you by Reformed Youth Ministries. I'm your host, John Parrott. This is episode number 441, and I'm here with Scott and Linda, and we're going to talk about parental surveillance. Scott, Linda, are y'all excited about this?
Oh, yeah.
I am, John, and I think, aren't you recording us? You're surveilling us, right?
That's true. Yeah. And actually, I've been recording you all day. You haven't
That's
done that,
scary.
But yeah, it's just part of this entire this entire podcast today. And I said, you know, I didn't know if I was going to mention this or not. And you know, we're here now. We might be videoing this too for our listeners. We might be dipping our toes into getting this on YouTube. So anyone who typically listens to this, you might be able to watch it eventually. We'll give you some more details about accessing that, because we don't even know if this will come to fruition or not, but we might be videoing. So we're all a little aware of our surroundings a little bit more. We all got our hair done, right?
So,
I was saying it, and then I remembered you made that joke on text. So, you know, So, I mean, for people who listen to the podcast, I mean, Scott's clean shaven, and he's got
too.
A beard. Yeah.
My daughter telling me my face is upside down. My head's upside down.
That's great. Before we get into the parental surveillance and kind of talking about that a little bit more, giving some examples, definitions, just a few announcements. If you tuned in last week, you know, Lord willing, Paul David Tripp will be on the podcast in a couple of weeks, and we're having a giveaway about his new book, New Morning Mercies for Teens. You can ask Paul David Tripp anything. We already have some questions that have come in through our social media channels, and so you can definitely communicate with us that way. If you have a question that you would like to ask Paul David Tripp, reach out and let us know. And if we read your question on the air, you can win a copy of New Morning Mercies for Teens. Another announcement to go along with that is we now have a way for you to either text us or leave a voicemail. You can call 850-630-0796. That's 850-463-0796. Either text or call, and you can ask us a question. And let me say a big thanks to Linda for getting this set up for us. Linda, how did you do it?
Google Voice. You know, it's not that hard to figure out. Many a woman knows how to set up a Google Voice number. I will say that.
How is that?
There are reasons that single women sometimes need Google Voice numbers.
Okay. There you go.
I feel a little persecuted. I'm a victim.
That totally makes sense now that you say that. But sincerely, Linda, this took work. We really appreciate you getting this set up. People have asked before, hey, is there a way we could call in? And so look, people, you can call in. You can record a voicemail. We might play it on the air if you have any questions, or you can just text us related to Paul David Tripp or anything else. But again, I'll have those details in the show notes, but that number is 850-463-0796. Linda, that's just really cool that you set that up for us. Yep. Looking forward to like all the harassment we're going to get through that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Today we're going to be talking about parental surveillance. Some of this came up because of just a section in Jonathan Haidt's book that you've heard a lot about, The Anxious Generation, this book right here. But he says this, and he's talking about, I think it's Leonore, is someone, a fellow researcher that he cites, and he says this: as I've heard Leonore describe the growing surveillance of children and the computer-assisted monitoring that parents now have of their academic performance, sometimes with instant notifications of grades and daily updates on classroom behavior, I have begun to feel creeped out. And even though tracking helped Jane and me, that's Jonathan Haidt's wife, Jane and me gained confidence in our kids when they were young, and it helps us now manage family logistics. Will we ever turn it off? Should we? I don't know the answer. And that's kind of how he ends a chapter where he's talking about parenting. But yeah, just this idea of parental surveillance. We're going to talk about pros and cons. There are reasons why we know parents do this. Maybe before this, us trying to think about, we lived life before this kind of thought existed. And really, you know, to our youth leaders that are listening to this, we feel for you because of this, because this is creating new issues for youth workers to have to deal with these parents that are assuming they should have total, just complete surveillance over their children's lives. But, you know, any thoughts on pre-parental surveillance? And I'll start us off and see if you guys have anything, just giving you guys some time to think. I mean, I went on a youth retreat when I was a sophomore in high school and a youth conference to Colorado. And I was gone the entire week. And I mean, for an entire week. And I had a calling card. And I called my parents once while I was gone. And I actually had busted my chin open rock climbing and got stitches. And they had no idea about it until after the fact. And again, I was away from them for that entire time. It wasn't a thought of, you know, are my parents monitoring this, anything like that. So any thoughts from you guys of just kind of pre-parental surveillance? Scott or Linda?
Gosh, I mean, I was thinking about growing up, like two of the neighborhoods that I lived in when I was young, it was definitely the kind of neighborhood that we could just roam around as kids, right? I even remember there being a night, I was probably in third grade when this happened, where I could hear my parents like calling out my name from a distance because they didn't know where I was, because I was like in between some pine trees, like doing something with other kids from the neighborhood, right? And so like they couldn't see us. We were hidden by the pine trees, but it was getting dark and it was time for me to come home. And that was just, you know, normal for us to be out doing that kind of stuff, and not like our parents not know exactly where we were, just that we were in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Scott, what about
you? Yeah. I, when I turned 10, I didn't see my parents again until I was 23. So, we were unmonitored for sure.
Don't know if you're joking or not.
Well, it's a joke, but it's not too far from it. So, I was born in 76, and so, you know, let's see, my mom died in 86. I was 10. But prior to that, it was pretty much just roam free, like Linda's talking about in the neighborhood. My dad had a whistle. He could whistle with his mouth really loudly. And, that was our cue to come home, but they had no idea where we were. I mean, we could be hundreds of yards away. We could be a quarter mile, half a mile away. We'd be out in the woods. We'd be down the dirt roads. We had a cave. There was a cave back in the woods by a creek, and we used to play in that. They just had no idea where we were. And then after, my mom passed away, my sister and I were latchkey kids. She was around for a little while, but she was older than I am. And she's older than I am by 4 years. And so by the time I was in seventh grade, I was pretty much on my own at home after school every day until like 5:30, 6 o'clock, when my dad would get home and we'd figure out how to do dinner. So I was very much not monitored at all during those years.
So why don't we maybe try to define this a little bit more? I mean, everything we're sharing and already saying kind of gives us an idea. And of course, just the words parental surveillance it's pretty straightforward. But any kind of nuance, Linda, you want to speak into that? Any just kind of color you want to add to what we've already said?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're getting at is probably some of the negative ends of it, right? So I was getting sort of a picture in my head of what it's like. It reminds me of like having a person standing over your shoulder watching you. Right. And that person like is doing that because maybe they're kind of like micromanaging you, They're not extending space to you. They're not extending trust to you. And there are some things about that that can like stunt your growth because you're not allowed to kind of discover how to do things on your own. So that was some of the picture that came to mind for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Scott, phrase surveillance just sounds negative, right? I mean, it just, it doesn't bring up good thoughts. So I wonder what parents who are kind of in this world right now. So I was thinking about this, like, you know, Height mentions the grades and things like that. And some of this has been foisted on parents, right? It's not like all of these, I think one nuance is that I don't think all of this is parents choosing this, right? Because the schools all want you to sign up for the emails and the text messages, and they want you to have all the information. And there's all these group message systems that coaches can have and things like that. And, you know, so not all of it is just their choice, but it's ending up that it's becoming a cultural push for sure. And I don't even know, honestly, I don't even know all the ways parents are monitoring their kids. I do know, Linda's thought made me think of Schreier's book. She talks about anytime a child is surveilled, it builds anxiety. So test monitors, like if teachers walk around the room, and this isn't new, right? Teachers have been doing that forever. We walk around the room and look at answers, it brings anxiety. And some of that anxiety is good, right? Because this person is caring for me. They're keeping me accountable. They're making sure I'm not cheating. But I think her point is that if all they are is monitored, if they don't have any chance to be on their own, that anxiety just sticks with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's something we'll probably come back to a little bit more. Again, this will be linked in the show notes, but the CDC actually had just a 4-page PDF talking about, you know, parental monitoring. And so kind of related to this, but, you know, they talk about parental monitoring includes three things. First, the expectations parents have for their teen's behavior. So there's an expectation for how they think they should, you know, be behaving. Secondly, the actions parents take to keep track of their teens. And then third, the ways parents respond when their teens break the rules. And so, you know, parental monitoring, in some ways we could just say, I mean, according to this definition, that's just parenting, right?
Right.
but parental surveillance seems to take it another step.
Yeah.
And so it's something maybe a bit more extreme. It's just a constant keeping tabs on children, what their whereabouts, you know, not only their location, the way they're behaving, as we might get into, the speed that they're driving in their car. Again, to quote Height, the instant notification of grades and all that kind of stuff. And maybe let's say this too. What are some other names that might fall under this category of parental surveillance? Some other descriptors that we've used before. Do y'all have any?
Like tracking, like parent tracking? Is that what you mean? Like other words to describe keeping
tabs? Well, this type of parenting. There's some other names that kind of fall under this category that others might be familiar with.
Yeah, like the helicopter parenting kind of stuff. I think I've heard recently too another word for that, but I can't remember what phrase people are using now.
It's not the bulldozer parenting, is it?
I don't know.
Was it drone? I thought I remember hearing something about parental droning or drone parents.
Yeah, it does seem like I've heard a nuance to helicopter parenting, because I know helicopter parenting is, you know, always around following them. Bulldozer parenting is like removing every obstacle out of their way so they can succeed. But it's still kind of a variant of this maybe idea or some of the concerns behind surveillance parenting.
We call them snowplow parents up here.
In Montana, that's right. well, hey, let's share some examples of how we've seen this. Because even for me, I mean, I've been removed from, you know, youth ministry in a local church for a while, but I did it, you know, for 13 years at one church and have volunteered even after that. And, you know, but, so I even have stories way back before some of this, but, Linda, Scott, you guys want to jump in with a story?
I've got two real quick. This was way back. This was probably about 8 years ago. I had a student and her relationship with her father wasn't great. So to keep track on her, he put a GPS tracker on her car that she didn't know about.
Oh,
and
wow.
he would follow her, and he caught her like going to her boyfriend's house right after school. And that just, I told him, I was like, that is not a good idea, but he did it anyway. And, really harmed their relationship.
Wow.
And then the other one's from last night. A student, told me, we were talking about ways that we, we were talking about rules that we don't care about. There's certain rules that we just want to, we'll just break without thinking about them. And one of the boys told me that he got in trouble for coming to youth group because he lied to his parents on Sunday, and his mom, in an attempt to keep him, to punish him, told him he can't go anywhere, so he can't go to youth group on Wednesday. But then she texted him and said, and I don't even remember what system he mentioned, but she tracks his phone, right? And she's out of town, she's traveling. And she said, I see you're a youth group. What are you doing? You know, and he said, I'm just going to ignore her text right now. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to come back to this later. So those are two I've seen recently.
And Linda, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, I have some stories I've heard of, or experienced myself from like retreats. So some of these are not me, and particularly this one. There was a time leaders were driving students back from a retreat that was very far away, and the leaders got a text at some point from a parent of one of the students on that trip saying, we can see that your vehicles are speeding. And they could see it because of the Life360 app that was on their daughter's phone. The leaders were going faster than they should have, but this parent wanted it to be known that she might, like, she also probably was not the only one that could see that, given how many students were with them in these vehicles. So I've heard that. Heard some, you know, just other instances of parents. Maybe this is kind of going into bulldozer parenting, but just hearing about something going on at a retreat where it's like, oh, I heard that my girl is being left out in some way, or I heard that my daughter is sleeping on the floor. And it was actually like, you have half the story. Like, your daughter is sleeping on a mattress on the floor, or like, actually, your daughter just happened to communicate with you, like the one moment she was alone, she's actually being included, or anything like that. One other quick one. I was just having a conversation with a woman who works in ministry the other week. And she said in their youth ministry, there was a parent that I think just has a lot of boundaries that they're trying to create for their student. And one of them, I think they just have very conservative views on dating and whatnot for high schoolers. So they told this leader, like, hey, I just really need you all to help me create the boundaries for my student, even while she's at youth group. And this leader asked, like, okay, so like, what would be, like, what would meet your requirements there? And the mom said, like, well, my daughter can never be in a conversation with just a boy. and so this leader was telling me, like, so I'm gonna go have that conversation with that mom later today and say that's not a boundary that I can help you maintain.
Yeah.
Like, we just can't do that. It was like, you know, maybe a little bit of a different thing, but like trying to control whether or not her daughter ends up in any conversation just one-on-one with a boy, even if it's in a public setting. That's a lot of kind of monitoring if she's asking other parent or other adults to like join her in that endeavor.
Yeah. But I would say, no, it absolutely applies here. I mean, it fits under this kind of idea of just parental surveillance. I mean, if we're kind of looking at that as a big umbrella term that a lot of things would kind of fit under, again, mine are so old, but it's kind of, you know, going back. I mean, I can remember we were taking a mission trip to Colorado, and we were on a charter bus, and the driver started to pull over on the side of the road, and I was wondering what's going on. And so I walk up there to talk with him, and there was a flat tire. And so we got out, and he's looking at it and talking about it, getting somebody to come. And my phone starts ringing, and a parent is calling me about that they said, "Hey, I heard y'all had a blowout and you're on the interstate." And this parent was very concerned, and I was thinking, what? And you know, a student in the back of the bus had already texted their parents, told them their parents are envisioning this, you know, horrific blowout, and we're like swerving on the end. And I'm just thinking, what has happened? I'm out here, and before we can even really analyze what's going on, a parent's already calling me about it. And then there was just kind of another one of, we eventually had a, you know, no device policy that we put into place that our youth committee came up with, that the elders signed off on, and we were not going to allow any smartphones, cell phones on a weekend retreat. And we gave parents all of the phone numbers of the youth staff as well as chaperones. And this one parent started calling up the elders, and it's the night before the retreat, and I'm getting phone calls, and they're wondering if we can make exceptions. And this parent is not happy. And I'm thinking, look, they can call me at any time they want. And so anyway, it's just that desire, right? Where parents are wanting to know just every single second of their children's lives and to be in control of that. And so, look, those are some examples. They're all negative that we just, shared.
Yeah. I have a positive one from RYM, actually.
Yeah. Go for it. Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking of this when Linda was sharing. It's like we were at the Colorado RYM a few years ago, and one of the girls that we brought with us just wasn't at the evening program, and nobody knew where she was. And we thought she was in her room, and they went down and they knocked on the door, and nobody was answering. And so eventually I just called mom. I'm like, "Hey, you know, we're in a situation, don't panic, you know, but we don't know where the student, your daughter, is." And she said, "Well, I can look, see where her phone is." And so she looked, and she sent me a screenshot, and it showed that she was in the cabin, but she was sleeping. And that we went back and then woke her up and found out what was going on. But that was really helpful, actually, because we were, you know, I was like, "Wow, what am I going to do here if I can't find this child?"
Yeah, absolutely. And see, that's, you know, that's a good segue, because I was going to say, you know, we're giving a lot of negative examples, but you know, let's talk about some of the pros and cons to this, because we can understand and sympathize with parents and empathize, you know, show empathy towards them with some of the concerns. And again, I'll link this in the show notes, but there's a article from The Guardian, and it talks about this. This is from 2022. And, you know, it shares the story of this girl who swerved off the road, and she, her car flipped and her arm was pinned in such a way where she couldn't move. It was, you know, the car was upside down and her arm was pinned. She couldn't reach her phone, and she was kind of down in, you know, a ravine a little bit. And so no cars could see her. And she was there for hours. And then eventually she heard a car stop, and it was her dad and her brother. And they were looking for her. And the only reason they knew where she was because of, I don't know if it was Life 360 or is it just Find My Phone? Is that the Apple? I can't remember. Yeah. So Find My Phone. One of those devices. And like they said, I mean, she had maybe a fracture in her neck. She had some nerve damage in her arm, you know, had no one found her for longer, for, you know, a day or days or whatever. It could have been way more serious. And so there's an example of how something like, you know, parental surveillance can potentially save a life of a child. And so maybe some of the pros and cons that we'll get into. Well, what are some positives? We just named two there. Scott, your example, the story I just gave from the Guardian article. What are some good reasons why parents should practice, you know, if we don't want to use the word parental surveillance, just parenting?
Yeah. Can I'll make this quick, so, because I want to hear from Linda, but we talked about our own experience growing up, and I want to make sure everybody knows that what I was describing for myself was not good. Like the freedom that I had, the unmonitored life was very detrimental to me. On one hand, I think as a teenager, I loved it, but it had lasting impact on my longing for affection that wasn't there, and just the desires that a child has for normal interaction with mom and dad. And so it seems like there's a pendulum swing, right? I don't know if Haidt mentions this in his book, cause I haven't read the whole thing, but in his interview with Rogan, he says that he sums the book up in this phrase: we're in a situation right now where we've overprotected our kids in the real world. We've overprotected our kids in the real world, but underprotected them online. And I think for me growing up, I was underprotected in both, right? Because online stuff was kind of starting barely at that point. And I guess what I want to say is that it's a good thing that we protect our children, right? And so I think that all of this reflects a good shift at some level, and I would have loved to have been protected way more than I was growing up in my neighborhood.
Mm. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Scott. That's just good to clarify that a little bit and just talk that out a little bit more. So thank you for sharing that. Linda, what about some pros for this? Anything to add?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are ways that this can be done well to provide accountability for the kids, right? So, I mean, the same way that even adults seek out accountability for good reasons, like it's good for someone else, like to have access to certain parts of my life so that I can't, like be saying one thing and doing something else, someone would notice, you know? So if a student, I don't know, like is consistently hiding something, this wouldn't allow them to do that as well. Right. It would open up conversations the parents could have with the student, to help them grow in honesty and integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, you both are hitting on that right there. I mean, just a lot of positives that we can point to. And there's just kind of this desire too of just, I mean, you know, if you think of just horror stories of kidnappings and all of these just terrible things we read about on the news, and to think, wow, there's technology now that could potentially make something like a child abduction to never exist anymore, you know, to remove it. And just that scenario to be taken away, because I mean, that is a horrific fear most parents feel of what if someone took my child? And so you can totally understand why any parent would want to have some kind of GPS location on where their child is. Safety issues, as we're talking about speeding, reckless behavior. Scott, going back to your example of being in an inappropriate relationship or a relationship that parents don't approve of, yes, maybe don't put the GPS device secretly in their vehicle. And there's a lot of maybe ways to prevent it from getting to that point. but all of these things we know are fears of parents. And so, you know, we want to be sympathetic to those, but then at the same time, you know, push back on that. Because I mean, even going back to Haidt of, you know, now that we have these technologies, are we going to go back? You know, now that we have gotten a taste of, I have the ability to always know where my child is because of this device or this app, is it wise to go back on it? And so, you know, maybe let's dip into the cons a little bit of what's happening here, because I mean, maybe we can say the biggest issue is just the idol of control. We have to realize that ultimately we don't have control. Yes, as parents, we are to strive to lead our children, to parent them, to have a certain amount of control, to express boundaries, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, there's going to be so many fears and issues that come about from a broken world that we're just not going to be able to control. And so like some of that plays into this just unhealthy desire to constantly have our children under surveillance. Scott, Linda.
I was thinking about when you were talking, John, and made me think about the cons or consequences. And I was thinking about Genesis 3, where Adam and Eve were under surveillance, right? God knew where they were. He walked with them. He was in a relationship with them. But then they sin, and what do they want to do? They want to hide. So it's part of our human nature to want to hide, right? And not be surveilled or monitored. And so I think one of the big consequences is it's this forcing our young people to, because I think one of the beautiful parts of sanctification as a Christian is that we want more and more of our lives to be exposed. I want you to know more and more about me. Mm-hmm. I want you to know what I'm doing online. I want you to know the friendships I have. You want you to be able to look at my text messages or whatever it is, right? So that's part of sanctification, is that vulnerability and exposing ourselves to community and accountability, like Linda was talking about. In a way, this is forcing our young people to be accountable when they don't want to be yet, in ways, right? We're not giving them the freedom to make a mistake and to come and confess it, right? They're not learning to, oh man, I screwed up. Dad, I need your help. Like, I scratched the car last night or whatever it was, you know? And that's hard on one of the consequences I see in that situation last night with that child I was telling about, is there's a trust issue that is going to take a long time to be repaired between him and mom, because she doesn't trust him and he doesn't trust her. And so her response to that is monitoring, right? When in our created order, God himself gave us the freedom to mess up, right? And he saw it, but he comes to us and he addresses it with grace and compassion and gentleness and kindness. And so I think it's a trust issue. It really damages the trust between child and parent, for sure, on both ways.
Yeah, that's really good. Really good, Scott. Linda, what about you?
Yeah, I think some of the things we've kind of referred to in passing so far fit in here, because, you know, when, like, yes, there are times when we need to teach students about the dangers of the world and, like, make sure that they're safe and all these things. But if you're growing up and you constantly have adults in your ear saying, you can't do that, it's too dangerous, or you can only do that if I'm watching you, then you're going to learn to be anxious. You're taking those cues from the world around you, and not being able to go out and kind of do stuff on your own will prevent you from developing skills you need to advocate for yourself, rather than having your parent fix things for you, or, you know, whatever it is. They need to have that ability to grow and develop. And I think that goes back to the way that God created things, like, in the beginning, and the way that Jesus worked with his disciples. Like, in the very beginning, when God created Adam and Eve, then he, like, entrusted them with creation. Pretty big task, right? And then you look at what Jesus does with his disciples in, like, Luke chapter 9, Luke chapter 12. It's like the 12 and then the 72. He's sending them out in those chapters, and he's telling them it's going to be dangerous. But here's, like, if you come across this situation, do this. And then he just sends them out, and they do come across some hard things. But then they also have successes. And I think that that's really a model for us to follow. Like, yes, like, those were not children he was sending out, but, like, it's a model of, like, here's how you develop mature people. Right. And I've seen that done well when I've seen families say, hey, like, you might come across this dangerous situation, and here's what you do when you do come across it. Here's what you do the day you will find pornography and you will be tempted to look at it. Here's what you do when you're at a friend's house and something is going on that makes you really uncomfortable and you want to come home. Like they know that those dangers exist and they know what to do when they face them. And they're sent out into scenarios where those dangers could pop up. I just think in those situations like that, that sounds like, hey, that's the way to teach someone how to move in a world that is full of danger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good, Linda.
Yeah. And again, going back to the whole the bulldozer parenting thing, it's not removing all the obstacles. Yeah. It's putting them in and allowing them to experience those things like you're talking about. And I mean, not only as you were talking about anxiety, but I mean, it's going to create anxiety in the child, but it will in the parent, because it's training the parent to have to know where they are at every moment. And if they don't, then they're going to, you know, freak out about it. And, you know, ultimately it's just, yes, we do have responsibility as parents to ensure the safety of our own children. But at the end of the day, God is sovereign and he's over that. And it teaches us to trust in his sovereignty. And, you know, as multiple parenting books will say, but just thinking of Paul David Tripp being one, him saying that parenting is working your way out of a job, that we have a biblical command to leave and to cleave, right? And to raise our children, to leave us and to leave our house and to go out into the world. And, you know, as sad as that is, bittersweet as that is at times, you watch them grow up and that's great. We see maturity. And so that's really sweet, but it's hard at the same time as they're leaving. But that's part of our role as our biblical call as parents is to raise them towards independence. And of course, yes, not ultimate autonomy where they're not dependent upon anyone. We want them to ultimately be connected to Christ and to his church and have community there, but also raising them to be mature adults. So look, I know we're about to run out of time, but maybe end on some things, some potential, just kind of where do we go from here? I mean, we would want to say, yes, let's utilize some of these technologies and they're not, you know, wicked and we're not in sin if we utilize those as parents. That's not what we're saying, but maybe some just kind of final thoughts as we start to draw this to a close. Scott, you got anything?
Well, the last time I was on here, I was thinking, how do I channel Kurt? I want to channel Kurt, the inner Kurt, and be, you know, I love how he interacts with you. So that, like, John, you're trying to wrap it up, and he always introduces like a new idea, a new thought. But we were thinking about consequences real quick, and I just can't help but share this. There's an article in the Atlantic called How to Land Your Kid in Therapy. It's several years old, and it's Lisa or Gottlieb, I think is her name. She's an author, psychologist. And she just talks honestly about being a mother and a counselor. And she says, so one of the consequences of some of the things we're talking about, and maybe this is, maybe if you're a parent listening, this is kind of like a warning, like a shot over the bow just to be on the lookout. But so listen to this quote from this article. Colleges have had so much trouble getting parents off of campus after freshman orientation, that school administrators have come up with strategies to boot them. At the University of Chicago, they have now added a second bagpipe processional at the end of the opening ceremonies. The first is to lead the students to another event. The second is to usher the parents away from the kids. A second bagpipe processional. The University of Vermont has hired, quote, parent bouncers, quote, whose job it is to keep hovering parents at bay. She said that many schools are appointing an unofficial dean of parents just to wrangle the grownups. Despite the number of articles in recent years exploring why so many people in their 20s seem reluctant to grow up, the problem may be less that kids are refusing to separate and individuate than their parents are resisting them doing so. Isn't that fascinating?
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. I've not heard that.
Yeah, and Schreier talks about menu anxiety. Have you guys heard of this? That many young people
say it again.
Menu anxiety. That young people have trouble when they go to a restaurant figuring out what to order because mom has just done it for them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Wow. But to your question, John, like, I just think if you're gonna monitor your kids, you just have to talk to them about it and tell them why. Tell them you love them. Give them opportunities to fail. It's an opportunity to grow, to learn. I think about like my computer's monitored, right? I have Covenant Eyes. My phone's monitored. My kids' computers are monitored. And when something pops up, it's just an opportunity to talk, to extend grace and kindness and compassion and warmth and welcome them into the narrative of the gospel, you know. But if you've got other motives, if you're doing it out of fear, it's going to end poorly.
Mm. Yeah, well said, Scott. Linda, you got anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing we want to affirm is like, yes, there are like risks in this world, and any parent who, you know, is worried about that, like, yes, like there are risks in this world. And I think we should also name that there is risk or harm in not letting our kids learn to move in the world on their own too. That will hold them back in life, right? And I think some of the biblical things we've talked about speak to it. But even there's just such this field of research from like a psychology perspective on this too. If anyone knows about like attachment theory kind of stuff, it has this idea in it that we all need a secure base from which to venture out and explore the world. And then we can come back to that secure base, right? So we need to be the secure, safe base for kids, and they can go out and feel confident to venture into the world from us, right? But that, like, the way that your attachment is shaped early on in life, like, profoundly affects that you relate to others and to yourself. And that's a really, really important thing. They need to be able to feel like they have both, that someone that's a secure base, but also the ability to go out and like venture and explore the world and do that with confidence.
And I like how you said that, Linda, that there's a risk there as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of the other end of the spectrum. And Scott, to kind of go to what you're saying too, really, you know, the fear aspect that you were talking about, you know, for those parents that are listening, searching your heart about your motivations. Look, so our oldest two have smartphones. I know their GPS location. I'm not saying this like, hey, this is the way to do this, parents, so just listen to me. No. All I'm trying to say from my heart is that's not something I ever check unless they're out and they're supposed to be home. And it's like, okay, I'm going to see, okay, are they headed home? All that. And so if I'm constantly checking that, I'm feeding my own fears in my own heart, and that's not going to help me. And so I know, yes, if there is one of these accidents that we've talked about and we need to know their location, I'm going to have that. Because, I mean, maybe we could say, look, we lock our doors at night to take safety precautions. You know, if someone really wants to get in, they can kick the door down. But I'm not going to leave my door unlocked. I'm not going to not utilize that technology. And so the same, it's out there. It's available. I can utilize it if I need it. And so I'm going to have it on, but for my own heart to just not feed those fears by constantly checking it. And so for those parents that are listening, maybe kind of think about that from your perspective, ways in which you're tempted towards this fear. Youth workers that are checking this out, if you're dealing with some of this, maybe pass this podcast on to some parents or share it where they can let somebody else be the bad guy instead of you. But again, just reminding people, and I want to look back because I don't remember the number. Okay. The number 850-463-0796. Let us know if you have any stories of this that you would like to share. If you want to leave a voicemail, we might share it on the air. We might not. If you want to send a text message, if there's any kind of concern about your voice or something being shared where it could give away details of a story you might share, don't worry, we would protect that. So you're safe by sharing that. Look, Scott, Linda, really appreciate you guys coming on and helping this discussion. Hopefully it's helping us think through just this new age of parenting.